Hi, hello, and hey, and welcome to this week's episode of the Critic Cast. The name is Larry, and it's such a pleasure being with you. Yes, exciting month it has been this August, full of drama, full of all sorts of things that happened. I'm going to share some of that stuff, at least from the last 10 days or so, in the first section. In the second section, we're going to be talking about working from home. How has that experience been for you? I've got a couple of your comments. And in the third segment, dating a narcissist, how you can tell that you're dating a narcissist and what you need to do about it. But first, let's talk about the news that has, the stuff that's made the news. Congratulations to Ralph Mopita. Zimbabwean guy, went to school in Zimbabwe, but he spent a lot of time in South Africa. He has been named the MTN Group Chief Executive as well as the president of the company. High achiever he is because he was started working there in 2017, and by 2019 he started working there in 2017 of April as the chief finance officer, and by 2019 he had won 4 awards, including CFO of the year. So he's a definitely high achiever, and the group is poising itself for, you know, expansion into markets and so forth. And so apparently he's the person who's best for that sort of thing. He worked before as the chief executive for Old Mutual's emerging markets. So a lot of people say, okay, maybe Zimbabwe, I mean, MTN is looking at investing. It's been talked about for a while in the state products such as Telecel and NetOne, with a lot of focus people talking about NetOne. But who knows what's there? Just speculation over here. DStv announced a bunch of new products. Yes, they announced, first of all, let me go through some of them. They announced an add movies option. Now, this option allows you to add, if you on one of the lower packages and there are certain products that have always been available to premium subscribers only, for 99 rands, you can add extra movie channels on top. So there's the Mnet Movies 1, Mnet Movies 2, one of them is action and the other one's like family oriented or something like that. And then there's Flicknet, and then there's also the, you know, the pop-up channels that come from Mnet from time to time that have always been available to premium subscribers. Those are coming through. Also mentioned is they've got this new decoder called DStv Explorer Ultra, which allows you to also stream services that are not DStv oriented and allows you to watch things in 4K. And then there's the DStv Streamer is a different set-top box, which doesn't work with a satellite, which doesn't need to work with a satellite, as I say. And so it's essentially DStv going full on into streaming. It comes with a button, a YouTube button as well. So you'll be able to, you know, use YouTube on the streamer decoder. There's rumors that platforms such as Netflix and Amazon Prime will be able to be accessed through the box, but they were silent about that aspect when they announced the launch. 5 new channels are coming to DStv as well. If you want to check them out, just go to 3mob.com. They're from Korean movies. There's the Turkish drama and, you know, so, and costume films are particularly exciting because Turkish film has just started taking over the world at the moment. Take Turkish cinema and so forth is like a new golden, you know, gem that people just picked up, and people are really excited about it. So that's coming to DStv soon. There's the kids channel. There's a Korean drama channel, and I think the other one is another action channel. And one more being a telenovela, you know, Latin America. The producers of Parasite come from one of the telenovela channels. So that should be exciting for people like that sort of thing. You know, the news, Zimbabwe changed its curfew times. Yeah, we just got an extra 2 hours to faff about. So it's from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. But the morning one still remains the same, 6 a.m. I kind of feel like the morning one should be shifted a little bit because most people at 4 a.m. probably need to go and get water to take a bath because the city council isn't providing water to everybody. So, but if you're outside at 4 a.m., then, you know, you're going to get arrested because it's outside curfew hours. And if you leave at 6 a.m., that means you're only taking a bath at a certain time. and you're only going to work after a certain time. And so that means you're getting into work later. The working hours have extended to 4:30 p.m. A lot of people are like, what's the point of the curfews? To be honest, I'm not sure. I don't know what the point of the curfews is, because I'm not sure why we have curfews. I know why other countries. I'm not even sure why South Africa has got curfews. And if they work, I don't know what they're supposed to do. I tried to do the research. Some people say it's because there's more reckless behavior during later hours, but people are just changing their reckless behavior from night till day now. It's just like during the lockdown period, people just started drinking during the day. And it's become sort of a norm. People now drink at, nobody looks at themselves funny if they decide they're craving a drink at 10 a.m. in the morning, because the lockdown period, they just started drinking that early. So I don't think a curfew necessarily changes people's behavior. Another change is Zimbabwe changes quarantine rules for immigrants coming into the country. Instead of going into isolation centers, if they come in and test negative for COVID-19 after a PCR test on landing, then they can go and isolate or quarantine in with where they're staying, really. And then they'll be tracked by the local response team. So they don't have to specifically go to an isolation center. Some news from Nigeria. Nigeria is changing its international flights. It's opening up to international flights on the 29th of August. Yeah. I'm not sure if they're opening it up to everybody. I know that I think Rwanda opened up to everybody. But Kenya is one that's literally opened up to, one of the few countries it opened up to was Zimbabwe. And one of my friends has actually gone to Kenya. I feel I should just do that. But anyway, they've opened up, they're opening up international flights as the world begins to open up again a little bit. Speaking also of COVID-19, Dr. Anthony Fauci, the White House health advisor, said temperature checks, you know, the ones that you get at entrances, they're actually useless for tracking screening for COVID-19, apparently. The reason being that they're so inconsistent. He said he went to get a temperature check, and the first one read something like 39 degrees or something like that. Went and sat in the car for a bit, came back, and it registered 36. And then he went into another room, and it registered 34. And I can tell you, I've had some of those experiences where the temperature readings are all over the place. Sometimes it's like my temperature is like 34.2. I'm like, am I not supposed to be on a ventilator somewhere, sick and, you know, gasping for air or whatever it is? So he says they've dropped that as recommendations for screening, you know, checking temperatures with a contactless temperature system, because it just doesn't tell you anything. So it's pointless. Kind of like says, what have we been doing? Oh, gosh. And finally, smartphones can tell if you're drunk. They took a 1,000 people, and they tested, 100 people, and they tested it. It was a small test, mind you. And what they did is that they had them drink a vodka cocktail quickly, and they strapped the smartphone to the back of them, and had them walk every hour and have a drink again. And to 90% accuracy, they were able to tell if the person was drunk because of the way they walked. So it was also determined by things such as pace and being able to, you know, whether you were going to walk straight or not. So, yeah, pretty exciting times. And what else is your cell phone knowing about you? And if you think of this function, there's a lot of possibilities. It could start telling you whether you're texting funny, and could probably give you a warning if you're drunk texting your ex.
We will not be held responsible for any hearing impairments or damage caused to you from excessive exposure to this sound.
Information is free.
The law.
There is hope.
Mommy says don't play with fire.
Ah! Oh, my God.
That's hot. But Mommy says it's okay to play everything.
Cool.
If you don't like them, I'm sure your sister will.
Hey, babe, you want to go out?
There are everyday actions to help prevent the spread of respiratory diseases. Wash your hands. Avoid close contact with people who are sick. Avoid touching your eyes, nose, and mouth. Stay home when you are sick. Cover your cough or sneeze. Clean and disinfect frequently touched objects with household cleaning spray. For more information, visit cdc.gov/COVID-19.
Furnished by the National Association of Broadcasters and this podcast.
So working from home, for me, it's something that I've been doing for years. So everybody's catching up on this. Yeah, it's a thing. I've always watched it from movies that, you know, people working. Oh, I'm going to my study and stuff like that. I haven't got quite a study, but it gets things done. So anyway, working from home. And I'm going to give you statistics that came from the United Kingdom. A census-wide item that came out from Eskenzi PR says 1,000 respondents, 26% said they would like life to return to how it was before lockdowns. 60% say absolutely not. 18% say they never want to return to work. 49% said they won't be going, they don't think they'll be going back to work before end of the year, or at least until the, towards the end of the first quarter of 2021. 40% say they like working from home. 5% say they never want to work from home. And 22% say they're more productive when they work from home. 74% say they are better off financially because of lockdowns. 60% say they're worried that if they go back to work, social distancing won't be possible, or at least they're worried about how it will take place. So to a large extent, people say, okay, this has changed the workplace forever. But one of the key things that's been coming up is what they call Zoom fatigue, where people are just getting tired because you've got your accessibility is always there. And you find yourself sometimes working into the night and working in periods that you don't have, you couldn't. It was particularly taxing when the early days of lockdown and didn't have anywhere else to go, because people were really like, I have nowhere else to go. You just started finding people meandering like zombies into shopping centers so that they could take time off from work. And that's just the thing. I think giving you tips of how I did it working from home is like taking regular breaks and having meetings away from home is important. And also just knowing the time you shouldn't be working. So taking time out to just say, look, I'm just going to watch TV for like 2 hours. And nothing like serious, not even work related. So you could watch trash TV, you could watch, you know, some weird pro reality TV program like Big Brother Africa is going on right now. You could just decide to catch up on that. And that's sort of like the accounts for water cooler moments. And I think, that's where the disadvantage, the raw disadvantage of that comes in, because what they found is that the opportunities for growth within organizations are becoming limited if somebody's working remotely. Because when you get hired to as a remote worker, say you get hired as an accountant, that's all they're going to talk to you about. Whereas if you work within an office, within a group system, when they see certain initiatives and so forth, then you know they naturally will think, okay, look, this person has taken on more responsibility. And they've gone outside their key result area, so therefore we can trust them with more responsibility. And there are softer skills that are only able to be seen in person as well. So there are skills that otherwise couldn't be seen. And there's also training on the job that you see your boss doing certain things and you start mimicking them. Mind you, maybe there are new HR systems that need to be written so that there's a better understanding of this. It's also important to note that around those HR systems, in the United States, when working from home was only at about 6% of the labor workforce, and people thought it was something that was going to happen in a dystopian future, before COVID-19 foisted it upon us, well, they started dealing with how do you deal if somebody gets injured on the job? So does your home become a workplace environment between 8 a.m. and 5 p.m.? So that how much do they take responsibility for? So, for example, if you're working and your child is about to fall, off a chair, and while you're going to rescue your child, you trip and then you fall and you get injured. Does that count as workplace compensation? How does that work? And also, if, say, for example, again, another situation, if you're working late at night because you couldn't work during the day, how does that get classified? How does off time get classified? Who's keeping track about the time that you're not working during the day, but because now you're more results oriented, you work at night? So how do you take time off from work? How do you take an afternoon off? All very interesting questions that are going to need a lot of ventilation so that the future of remote work is better understood. Reality is remote work is here to stay. Although I do feel that a lot of people are going to start wanting to go into co-location type of workspaces, if not permanently, but at least a certain number of times per week. It gets to a point where I think you want to be broken apart from your family, from your home and so forth. And those, as I say, those water cooler moments where you're talking to cheaper over the water cooler and catching up on sport or whatever the case may be, those, I think, are priceless moments in terms of team building. A lot gets created outside the former working moments within an office that edify the whole working experience. And then also then, this is I think, a real worry in terms of equality issues. While the hiring systems may simply say that women and men will be hired equally because people are going to be judged on their competence rather than on their sex, the other side of it all is that supposing Larry has got a friend called Tamuka and we see each other more often and we work in the same company, I am more likely to recommend Tamuka for promotion because I see him at a pub. Or I understand his family, I know his children, I know his work, home situation and so forth. I know aspects about him that I'm not going to get from his job. And what's going to happen is that creates a boys-only club, like what's used to happen in Wall Street, where they simply said, if you watch The Wolf of Wall Street, that men just went to strip clubs together. And certain deals and certain things that affect the workplace would get discussed in that, just like people go and, you know, discuss important business decisions over a game of golf. The chances of then other people getting excluded from aspects of the workplace become a reality. But like I said, those things need ventilation as to how and when to deal with them. But I did ask a couple of you what you felt like working from home, and this is what you had to say. I'll see you on the other side with the third part of the Criticast.
Okay, so thanks for choosing this topic. Very interesting question. In my experience, I think that working from home is the best thing that happened to me this year. Turns out I'm very productive when I work from home, so I absolutely love it because of the flexibility. I have more control over what time I do certain tasks, and there's not so much emphasis on how I do things, but really at the end of the day, what's more important are the results. So I find that it saves me a lot of time. And money as well, because I then don't have to commute to the office every so often. So I think that I've been more productive and more efficient in how I work. And I've also learned to work with minimum supervision because there's no one looking over my shoulder to actually watch me work. So it's really up to me whether I spend the whole day in bed or I actually spend my day working. And sometimes I even find myself putting in some work over the weekend. So I think I've learned a lot in terms of working without supervision and also being more results oriented and focusing on things that really matter. I absolutely love it. I had the opportunity to go back to the office for one day a week starting this month, and I absolutely don't like it because I find that I'm more productive when I'm at home.
Larry, I feel like working from home is okay. I felt it would be a bit relaxed, but I feel like it's a trap because you literally have no break time. You're just working throughout the day, no lunch. You're in one Zoom meeting or another. And, you know, you start as early as 7 a.m. because you start getting calls and everybody's assuming that, you know, as long as you're home, it means you're very accessible. People send you emails at 11 p.m. and they're expecting responses for them. So it's okay because you're home, you're not moving around, the exposure from COVID is limited or it's less. But then the work hours just seem eternal. You know, you're not breaking at any time, even lunch time. You're basically just muting your laptop so that no one can hear you chewing your lunch, or you take your laptop to the kitchen just so that you can cook, you know, while you're having a meeting. But then it's been okay, although, you know, sometimes people just want some air to breathe, stuff like that. So it's a 50-50 argument, I can say.
Mina ngasangana ngisebenza from home ngoba abantwana bangumsindo besenza njengalo se-background sekhuluma ama-meatballs. Vele ngingasangana ngempela, it's better to go to work ngitshaya ngumoya. Yo!
Hey, Larry. It's been fun working from home. Well, I work in the sky, so there's no intercity travel, there's no over-border travel. So for me and my fellow crew, we get to chill at home. So it's eating and sleeping and watching telly and trying to read. It's been fun, but now it's boring. But I've been enjoying being at home, working from home. Is it? I miss working though.
Yeah, yeah. Hi, this is Clive Chikubu, and you're listening to the Query Cast.
Shop, shop.
Query Rap.
A narcissist is a person who lacks empathy, acts entitled, arrogant, and prioritizes themselves above all else. Now, I've been following a YouTube channel by Dr. Ramani Devasula, who is a licensed clinical psychologist and narcissism expert. And do check her out. She says some really important things about dealing with narcissists. Now, a narcissist are difficult to track if you're an object of their affection. And I'm going to share with you in this third section of the Query Cast, which is always, of course, the relationship segment, how to spot that somebody's a narcissist and what to do about it. So narcissists, first of all, you can't spot them at the first glance because they're extremely charismatic. And what you feel is what they call a magical connection. I'm going to come back to that thing called a magical connection in just a bit because I really need you to understand this. It's such a difficult thing, and I know a lot of people just don't get it. And I've been in those sort of relationships, and they don't feel that way until at some point I'm going to give you the signs. Then you start feeling like, no, this is not it. This is I deserve better. Now, what they do a lot of is that they engage in what is called love bombing. It's a manipulation tactic where you overwhelm somebody with affection, acts of service, and gifts in order to get what you want. Now, and according to Dr. Davisola, they say it's just mentioned things such as vacations, gifts, elaborate experiences, constant contact. They're always talking to just too much information, or just the intense interest is just, overall is just huge. So a narcissist relationship often starts as too much, too fast. And this is when followed by a cycle of devaluing, discarding, and ups and downs, she continues to say. Another thing is that during that period of a lot of affection, there is a lot of, you feel like there is a magical connection. Like you can't explain it. It's like, wow. It's like, you know, sunshine and butterflies and goat milk all day. It's just always excitement. Now, that's a proper red flag right there. You know, just be wary because they are essentially working to get into your space. Then when you talk, they hog the conversation. They talk about how great they are. They talk about their own accomplishments and achievements to a grandiose level. And when you speak about yourself, they know follow-up questions. And they don't express interest in trying to learn you that much. They make it up. Or even when you say something about yourself, somehow they find a way to make it about them. Which leads us to the fact that they feed off your compliments, okay? People are self-confident in general, don't rely on you or anyone to feel good about themselves, but they kind of want you to tell them that they are a very good person. But if you don't, they punish you everyone for showing giving them a sense of self-worth. And to a large extent. Sorry over there, that just happened, you know it is. Recording and doing other things at the same time. Multitasking, working from home and things like that, you're getting all sorts of stuff that's happening. Anyway, oh goodness, am I making this worse? You're going to hear that. They lack a lot of empathy, okay? Their ability to feel how somebody is feeling. So they don't really take a personal interest in you. They just don't do that. And this is something that happens after that honeymoon phase. They're outwardly self-centered. So before they, you know, the affection has stopped, the gifts they started dwindling. Instead, they have drastic swings in their behavior. Dr. Darsula says, as soon as they have you, it's like they have a kid. It's like a kid with a toy. They become a bit disinterested pretty quickly. And the devaluing cycle happens. Then it's officially toxic. She goes on to say things like they get angry very quickly. They're inconsistent about certain things. They become shady. How do they manage stressful situations? They're sometimes sensitive about some offhanded compliment that you make that they perceive as an insult, and sometimes they want to be seen as just too good and just too, you know, like they are here to save the world. They're God's gift to mankind. And another thing that you start feeling at this point is you start feeling controlled. And you become sensitive about what you say around them because you think what you say may jeopardize the relationship. They might get you to start isolating your friends and tell you when you can go out, what you should eat, what you should wear, and things like that. Any small disagreement becomes a full-blown argument. Another red flag about the friendship aspect is that you realize that they don't have many friends that are long-term or any friends that go beyond the cycle of, say, 2-3 years. Because if their friends can't handle them, then therefore it's a red flag. It means that you essentially are dealing with somebody who other people can't chill with. You know, they're just thinking, oh my God. But as I said, if they can't have long-term friends, then therefore a long-term relationship is difficult. And what is worse, this is one that is pretty huge now. If there is a discussion problem that happens, they accuse you of unfair treatment. They'll gaslight you, okay? So you start walking around them as if on eggshells. Now, talk about gaslighting. They start questioning your perception of truth and reality. Or they may tell you that you're misremembering an ugly fight that happened where they called you names. And say they misunderstood clear boundaries you verbalized, or blame their behavior on outside factors like stress or childhood trauma. And it gets worse. You start internalizing this and you start defending your partner's bad behavior, toxicity, and sometimes even abuse. You know what I mean? That's narcissist, dealing a narcissist right there. You start telling yourself that it will get better, or blame your partner's behavior on stress or childhood and say they didn't really mean it and, you know, and that sort of thing. So you feel upside down and confused in the relationship. You often make excuses and rationalizations for the relationship, say to Dervisula. All of this toxicity and gaslighting may leave you feeling a bit hollow and without a sense of self-worth in the relationship. And what is even worse, even like calling what the relationship is weird. Like they won't tell you it's a relationship. And, the important reasons why some people won't want to define a relationship. Sometimes they're polyamorous and you've agreed friends and benefits situation, or you're keeping it casual, or they just not figure it out. But if your partner is exhibiting some of the symptoms in the list and won't commit, it's likely a red flag, okay? Yeah, they like you to treat them like they're your partner so they can reap the intimate, emotional, and sexual benefits while keeping an eye out for prospects who they deem superior. And one thing that they never do is they never apologize. You know, if they're late for something, they don't say they're sorry. They don't call when they're supposed to. And when they do call, they don't say they're sorry. They cancel important things and they just carry on. And then when you try to break up with them, they get into a fist of panic. They may love bomb you. They'll say all the right things. They get out of their way. They come and they drop off gifts. They give you this rush of attention, this overwhelming attention that clouds your judgment. And you say, okay, all right, you know, I'm going to give them another chance. You know. Is there a rush? And why they do that is because not necessarily that they need to keep you in the relationship, but their narcissism, their ego is coming into play and saying that I cannot be the person who lost in this relationship. I tell you when to go. You don't go because you feel like you're going. So that's the narcissism again. If you're going to leave, you're going to leave on my terms. And when you show them that you're really done, they start lashing out. Because their ego, as I said, is severely bruised. So they feel rage and hatred for you. They call you all sorts of names. They might badmouth you to your face or tell other people and say that, you know, they've tried to even steal your friends. they'll start immediately dating somebody else to make you feel jealous and try to show you that they're with somebody else. So now what? Well, there's only one thing, okay? Because none of this time are they spending trying to improve their relationship with you. Dr. Dervis-Tillis says the best thing to do is to cut your losses. Once you sense the red flags in the early days of the relationship, get out before you have too much of an investment in it. So what you've got to remember is to always constantly remind yourself that you deserve better. Okay. I cannot stress this enough. You cannot change a person with a narcissistic personality disorder or make them happy by loving them enough to change yourself or by changing yourself to meet their whims and desires. Let me say that again. You cannot change a person with a narcissistic personality disorder or make them happy by loving them enough or by changing yourself to meet their whims and desires. They will never tune in with you. They are not empathetic to your experiences. And you will always feel empty after an interaction with them. They don't feel fulfilled in a relationship or in any area of their lives because nothing is ever special enough for them. Okay, so nothing you can do can help this relationship. So what you need to do is in preparation for a breakup, start strengthening your relationship with empathetic friends. Build a support network of friends and family who can remind you of what is real to you. Remember, they have taken your reality away, your sense of self-worth. They started getting you to question your personality, questioning what's important to you, questioning things that were obvious to you before. Tell them they need to go get therapy, okay? And after the relationship, go and see a therapist because they have manipulated something in your core. They have changed you. Remember the thing about walking around eggshells where you worry about what you might say to somebody and so forth? You are going to carry that baggage into the next relationship. So don't just walk out of that one and just go to the next because some of those experiences are going to define you. Much the same way that a lot of the people don't know that the first relationship they had, that's why they call it the first cut and is the deepest because you've never had a relationship of that nature with somebody who's not from your family. That changed you. So this is going to change you. So you need to walk out of that situation. And I'm going to say that again. You cannot change that personality disorder. It needs to be attended to by an expert. You can't make them happy by loving them enough. And you cannot change yourself to meet their whims and desires. So the only thing you can do with a narcissistic relationship is to leave. This isn't meant to diagnose. Remember, this is not about diagnosing your partner. This is about seeing the outline of unacceptable behaviors and reactions in the context of a loving and equitable relationship. So I'm not saying that you necessarily know that this person has a narcissistic personality disorder, but then they go to see, these are some of the things that you're going to pick up. But if you see a lot of these red flags, then you should start first focusing paramount on a paramount level of taking your care of your own mental health, your own sometimes even physical well-being, so as to be able to survive dealing with a narcissist. And that's it for this week's episode of the Criticast. I'm hoping that it was helpful. Iona.fm is where you can find me. Oh, but next week we got some cool things that are coming up from 3 Men on a Boat. A very brand new product that they're running from to the beginning. It's going to be running until the end, until mid-December, like 22nd December around. It's a new podcast, very exciting. We've already started working it. So check out the 3 Men on a Boat platforms for updates. You can also on my Twitter at @CreditIALarry, I'll be putting out a lot of updates and marketing for it next week. Very exciting new product. You just know it's going to be exciting. Get in touch with me, as I said, on social media. KWIRIRAYI is my Twitter handle. Larry CreditIA is my Instagram. On TikTok, CreditIA, and just for Larry CreditIA for all over the internet. And also email address is larry@3-mob.com. This podcast is part of the 3 Men on a Boat network and is that's our publisher, and is available on iona.fm. It's available on Podchaser, on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts. Just go subscribe on any of those platforms to get information as and when they come out. Other than that, yeah, as you saw, if you picked up those who are early listeners of the Criticast, because it's six years since the Criticast started. Yeah, gosh, is it? Actually, 7 years. Goodness, yes, 2000. Yeah, some year. I used the original opening, the ones that from the old school listeners. This one I used for this week, so yeah. Otherwise, take care of yourself and the people that you should love. It's Larry. It's been the Criticast. And as I always say, from where I come from, I see Luis Cervenza. Take care of yourself.